Hi, folks. It's Henrik Palmgren here, and you're listening to Red Ice Radio. I hope you had a good week and that you're staying warm. There was finally some snow up in the north. Well, around where we have one of our headquarters, anyway. Beautiful, cold, white, crispy, yet puffy snow. It's a northern thing, you know. Ice, the element that shaped us into who we are. If you're new to the show, here's some of the websites to check out. RedIceCreations.com, RedIceRadio.net, and RedIceMembers.com. We're working on some exciting developments and updates in the background of everything. It's as busy as ever, consequently. And I have reached out to you guys during the last few shows to inquire about your interest to work with us as volunteers, well, at least initially. Now, this is concerning producing videos, writing articles, posting news, or why not translate? I mean, we need people that can translate stories from the various different languages, European languages, into English. So if you want to do that for us, please get in touch with us. We'd love to have you be part of what we do. And, you know, if things work out, it could lead to a position that is something you could more or less do full time, right? That is the idea. So do reach out. RedIceCreations@gmail.com is the email to write us on for now. We do read all of them, by the way. We try to get back to as many as we can. So give us a bit of time on that as well. There are so many things going on right now. Okay, anyway, today's show. Our guest is Brian Enspatrick. He's a professor of communication at the University of Toledo. He teaches undergraduate and graduate courses in research methods, group communication, propaganda, and persuasion. He is also a nationally recognized expert on American gun culture, as well as the author of many scholarly papers and five books, including The Ten Commandments of Propaganda that we spoke about last time he was with us. Well, for this show, we're going to speak about zombies and guns. The zombie phenomena is an interesting one. I mean, where is the roots? Why has it become such a huge phenomena in pop culture? And what does it say about the times that we live in? So Brian wrote the book Zombology, Zombies and the Decline of the West and Guns. That's what we'll be talking about today. So let's get to it. Hi, Brian. Welcome back. Pleasure to speak with you again. It's great to have you back on the show.
Thank you, Henrik. Good to talk to you. It's been a while.
It's been a while, exactly. I think close to nine months, something like that. And we did actually speak about, well, briefly, very briefly, about your book that we're going to dive into today in more detail, Zombology. Tell us first what the word means and what lies at the root of your interest for this topic.
My interest, Zombology. What I mean by that is it's just the study of the zombie in general. It's almost like the study of the zombie symbols and so on. And the meaning of the zombie, what the zombie, why the zombie it emerges as such a strong and popular symbol, I would say archetype in modern times. You know, I would say the zombie is the premier archetype of modern times. I mean, this is our phase we're going through. Back in the 1950s, people worried about UFOs. And back earlier, they worried about the Blessed Virgin. And now we're worried about zombies.
Yeah, interesting. It might be something to that. You're right. When did you become interested in that?
It was like a lot of things. There was a bit of accident. There was a bit of a comment from my wife. We were driving into a mall one day, a mall near Ann Arbor, Michigan, which is where U of M is. And the Ann Arborites are an interesting breed of person anyways. There are a lot of pharmaceuticals used in that city, prescription and otherwise. And my wife's comment was, quote, "I hope all the fucking zombies at the mall took their fucking Prozac today," end quote. And, you know, she was right. I mean, that there were just people shuffling around in hordes. I was reminded of the some of the classic movies I've seen in what we could call the zombie canon, the old Dawn of the Dead movies, and how they're set in consumeristic settings where you just zombies or shuffling through malls and so on. And here it was right in front of me.
You know, it's I can't help to agree, you know, in terms of where we are going overall and how people seem to be developing. And well, I want to get into kind of more detail about that later. Let's just kind of go back a bit though. I mean, where does this phenomena come from? Is White Zombie 1932 like one of the first movies on this, or how far back do we have to go here?
I started looking at this more systematically after my wife's enlightening comment or question. And I realize that there's a big difference between the old zombie and the new zombie. The white zombie film, and like the old Boris Karloff era films, and so on. That's a different kind of zombie. That zombie was kind of a minion. That zombie was a kind of a low-level performer, but under the control of some evil person and so on, or something like that. The modern zombie is a very much different thing, and it's a scarier thing because the modern zombie is like the mass society's version of autonomy nowadays. People just shuffle around and kind of go like, duh, and go to the mall and look for brains, you know, and... and by brains, I mean entertainment. You know, they don't have enough going on. Apparently, this brain, what I equate with entertainment, consuming entertainment, constant distraction, is the antidote for, well, at least it takes away the pain of being a zombie. And this comes out of one of the zombie films. If you've watched some of them, there was an early zombie film where they have a rare talking zombie and. The zombie says that she eats brains to ease the pain of being dead. Well, I think nowadays people are afraid of being alone. They're terrified of being with themselves. I work in a university, and I see students walking around. They're all plugged into some kind of device, so they don't have to be by themselves.
Right.
They get off the elevator, and they're talking to someone. They're saying things like conversations that really – they're just sort of affirmative, I'm alive or I'm here. Things like, I'm getting off the elevator now, I'm walking down the hallway now, and so on. And I ask myself, what's going on here? I think they're afraid of confronting the self or something like that. And they get in this kind of collective horde and they kind of drift around. And entertainment takes away the pain of being alive or aware or something like that. Yeah, it's a scary thing.
Wow.
They're fleeing from it, I believe.
Remarkable. Yeah, I agree. I think you're absolutely right about that analysis. I think people are, they're afraid of being alone for the fact that they're afraid of silence. They're afraid of reflection and any kind of depth, really, it seems like. And therefore, it becomes about this very shallow, activities and pop culture and constantly commenting on what you're doing. And I guess it's all reflective of the kind of the social media kind of lifestyle that a lot of people are living today.
Oh yeah, it's all we're surrounded with 24 hours a day with this distracting noise, this kind of a hum, and we're all kind of lined up shuffling along together, but we're not going anywhere. We've already arrived, and that's kind of the modern equivalent of autonomy. That's scary. There's no really direct the zombie is self-directed, but in a very limited way.
Is there? Yeah, I mean, when it comes to the archetype, is there some kind of is there some guiding entity, or does it just kind of work like a hive because they're so similar? How do we explain that?
Well, it's certainly a group. It's a mass psychology thing. And, I sought other theorists to help explain this and try to elaborate on this. And I was trying to look at other situations historically that would give rise to such things like and I'm speaking of zombies as an emergent symbol. And one of the things I looked at was the old UFO craze back in the 50s, the late 40s, and it continued pretty strongly to the 60s. And for some people, I think they're still immersed
still,
in it.
Exactly. Thank
you very much. And I think the UFO craze, or whatever you want to call it, was what Carl Jung, the psychologist, the psychiatrist, would have called a visionary rumor. And these things occur. It's a mass phenomenon, and they occur in times of high anxiety. And if you look at the UFO craze or fad or whatever you want to call it, I think it's more serious than a fad. The hula hoop was a fad. The UFO sounds like something different. But if you look at these things, and the UFO comes out of the time when we're in the nuclear age. We go into the Cold War. I mean, all of a sudden, there's a great deal of mass anxiety over the fact that we can blow each other or the world up or something, they thought, at any time. And you look at what comes out of that era, you get all the sci-fi movies come out of it. They're all the same thing, crazed mutants running around. How come the crazed mutants always go after the mutated monsters, go after the good-looking women? I've
exactly.
always wondered that.
I know.
But nevertheless... But you have these mutants emerge. You have fear that we're going to blow ourselves up, and people start seeing things in the sky. And you only even wrote a book about this, something like the UFO phenomenon, things seen in the sky. But there's high anxiety. And we have a modern era of high anxiety, too. And I believe the anxiety is over cultural decline, where people sense, I don't know how things are in Europe. I haven't traveled. But
Ooh, it's bad. It's bad, Brian. It's the same.
Okay, yeah. Good. Otherwise, I'm out of sync. I want to be in sync, even if it's with something that I don't like.
Yeah.
People here, if you're working class here, the golden era is over. I mean, nowadays you work at a fast food place. I mean, the auto jobs where you could afford to go to Paris on vacation, those automobile jobs are gone. The future is automated kiosks at McDonald-like structures and so on for many, many people. People go to school and they come out owing horrifying amounts of money so they can get a job as a clerk in some miserable cubicle somewhere. So people are anxious about this kind of thing, and they don't see opportunity. They're worried about things like crime, social decay, and these are obvious things that you see in the zombie movies. I mean, what are the zombie movies not, if not suggestive of some kind of general breakdown of civil society, where the people who live down in the inner city are all going to come out to the burbs and eat your stuff? I mean, if there was actually a social breakdown in many cities in America, most major cities are like this. In a week, what would we'd be back to eating people? I mean, what would they do after the Hostess ding dongs are gone?
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think there's a lot of anxiety over this. And historically, if you go back to other times, you see other visionary rumors. For example, I talked about in the book, I use the example of instead of UFOs, you have BVM sightings, Blessed Virgin Mary sightings, mm-hmm. which seem to come in response to mass anxieties. And one of the classical ones, and these take place all over the world, they're remarkably similar. One of the classic ones was Fatima, where you have these four shepherd children who see the Blessed Virgin Mary. Now, this is taking place during World War I, a time of mass unrest, Russian Revolution, Europe set on its head, and so on. And a lot of the messages that the Blessed Virgin delivers are essentially, don't worry, everything's going to be all right. My son Jesus is going to come and set everything to order and so on. Crowd psychology kick in. You have this contagion. You have this impressionism. You have a high degree of suggestibility. These things take off. And in modern age, the classical ancient people dream things. They talk things. I think our media are dreams in a lot of ways. I mean, that's what that we see our little symbols drift around in and so on.
How do we explain that we kind of tap into those memories collectively? If this is a, let's say, historical event, how does multiple people kind of see the same thing if that is indeed what happens?
Damn good question. I guess we're all more or less human. You know, I'm a realist. I regard myself as that. I'm practical. I'm certainly not like one of these California, I feel the good vibrations types.
New Ager, yeah.
Yeah, but on the other hand, I think we do have shared ancestral memories and deep residual abilities and Jung called them archetypes and so on, symbols and so on that resonate. Because you get this similarity of symbolisms that show up from culture, to culture or at different times and so on. Obvious one, swastika. And that thing's been drifting around for 6,000-8,000 years in various mm-hmm. formats.
That's right.
And the symbol itself appeals to us, but also other symbols, things that, we are human beings. We have shared ideas and so on. So I'd be very surprised if we didn't have some kind of ancestral memory. Because I know I've been in situations where I just went on automatic pilot and things went very well. It wasn't
right.
Anything I did. Yeah, but reflexes, who knows? I mean, we're an ancient species and I don't really, I think there's a lot more to us than we suspect. Let's put it that way.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I agree. I think you're right. I think there's definitely something that we tap into. And so obviously that would kind of explain it to a certain extent of why it's happening or whatnot. And that's interesting itself. So if we've established that, let's talk about how this new one then has managed to kind of I don't know if it's taken the place of others or if it's just maybe one that predominantly occupies us during a specific time, let's say, in history. But how did the zombie get that position of an archetype that several people independently, it seems like, are attracted to and see or even make movies about?
Yeah, it resonates with many people for whatever reasons. Okay, here's one of my beliefs. I think the zombie appeals to people, us generally, because it's the ultimate death head symbol and so on. And in Western culture, you know, we're a progressive, individualistic culture and so on. We kind of enable to believe in progress, work, we're creative. But the other side of the coin is that there's this historically, there's been this notion of decline, this fear of decline. You look at look at the Garden of Eden. You know, I mean, a classic decline story. The things that have fascinated people over time, the Golden Age, then declines. The theories of decline in history, like Jobinu and Spengler, everybody. All this stuff has fascinated people. Somehow or other, the idea of original sin. There used to be a better time than there is now. So this is built into us too. And the zombie is certainly a symbol of decline. I mean, what more obvious one could you have? And I think that's so it titillates this. It speaks to these fears. And deep underneath, you know, every human life. I don't know how old you are now. I'm 61 years old now. And I'm of an age where I'm seeing a lot of people I know die. I mean, life is loss. It's a wonderful life, but it's terrifying at the same time. This is kind of this, it's the other side of the coin and so on. So I think these decline things, the zombie speaks very much to our decline predilections, which is a big part of our nature.
Yeah, I mean, would you say that we are partially also due to the time that we live in are becoming living dead? Because, I mean, we surround ourselves with so many issues or things, as I should say, that seems to be detrimental both to our behavior and to our IQ and whatnot. And I mean, we've done shows on everything from GMOs and vaccines and even glyphosate or Roundup, as they call it, by Monsanto, that they, you know, many used to do spray on our, you know, on the fields, etc., which has, you know, provable negative effects on our gut and our gut flora, which of course, actually, interestingly enough, makes us stupid because they've called the gut the second brain. It actually interacts with our nervous system in a certain way. But, you know, these are just some of the issues, of course. There's many more things out there. But is that why it's happening? Or is it that our culture is in decline and we then consequently kind of adopt a behavior that reinforces that? Or how would you explain it?
You know, in a sense, it's a symbolic confrontation. We confront that which that terrifies us, that haunts us. I also look at the zombie as the ultimate collective, a big collective. You know, and this is one of the struggles of current history and past history. I mean, the individual in the West is all about the individual and creativity, as opposed to the collective. We don't live in an ant heap, even though some politicians apparently think we should. In a way, the zombie is a rehearsal of what we should do. If you notice, one of the clear lessons of almost everything in the zombie canon is that the response to the zombie is an armed individual. And it's kind of a reaffirmation of the power of the individual or how an individual succeeds. You arm yourself. And you fight back. You might form a small group or something, but you don't form some massive collective. It's the little tribe or the individual or the few individuals against this gigantic shuffling collective. And believe me, zombies are the ultimate equalitarian kind of society. I mean, they're all united in every possible way.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, I wanted to ask you about some of the movies that you think might have put this on the radar, on the map. I know we're obviously talking about something symbolic here, but for that reason, I think movies that reaches so many millions of people is kind of an important component, because we had, you know, what Walking Dead, The Dawn of the Dead, Living Dead and all these Night of the Living Dead, all these old movies and whatnot. But something seems to have happened after, don't know if you have another take on this, but after 28 Days Later in 2002, and after that, tons of these, kind of stories ended up as TV shows, and it becomes not just something that kind of a cult following were adopting, but it become like known to everybody. I don't know if you would agree with that analysis of it.
Oh, I do agree with that, because again, I think the even the dullest of dullards should have some inkling that there's something going wrong in this culture. I would hope so.
Exactly.
So I think it does speak to fears in a lot of people, or at least it allows them to kind of entertain these fears in a way that doesn't cause them to fall apart. You know, if you really sit down and start thinking, you're going to cause yourself a lot of anxiety. So I think these kind of entertainments allow people to kind of rehearse this stuff, go through it without too much personal trauma, or they can forget about it in the morning, if you know what I mean. they're a panacea of sorts, I guess, but they do speak to they speak to so many people. There are certain films. So your question made me think of another commonality of the films. You'll notice almost invariably, the zombies are caused by government or corporate malfeasance.
Right, some experiment or something.
Yeah, and these are all the problems. This is what the big collective has done for us. The government has far from delivered its promises. They've delivered this kind of shambling, cannibalistic horde that's crawling in your door right now, or trying to. And again, the response to that is armed individual self-reliance, back to the old individualistic man. And you also see, I believe, the zombie speaks to a lot of anxieties. There are obvious parallels. Like, for example, uncontrolled immigration. If you saw the movie version of World War Z, you remember there's the Israelis try to build a wall, keep out the zombies, and the zombies crawl over the wall and so on eventually. And doesn't that sound familiar to people in Europe, you think, now?
Yeah, exactly. I know.
Yeah, and
trying to build a wall, people. Yeah.
Yeah, they're coming over the wall, under the wall, through the wall. Hell, there are people who want to just take the wall down. And also you get these other terrors. For Western society, one of the big results of progress, so to speak, caused by the government, is iatrogenic illness caused by medicine, by doctors, by medicals. And a lot of these are, and plus you deal, that overlaps with geriatric problems and so on. As the population ages, you have hundreds of millions of people who become incapable of taking care of themselves, who are almost near zombies, but they have needs, and they're citizens, and they're represented by the collective, and they will feed on us. And I'm not a proponent of euthanasia or anything like this, don't get me wrong, but this is a reality that somebody needs to think about this. Just overpopulation in general. Racial problems. If you watch some of the Resident Evil films, sometimes they'll show the zombies. I remember a particular clip where it was a sort of a cutaway clip that showed like a pull away, where they showed the zombies wandering around the subterranean, the buildings and things like that. And they were like in blackface and so on, with just these eyes you could see in the dark and kind of profiles in the dark. And it reminded me of those old films that where they used to show black people and, comics, all you see is like the eyes shining at night and so on. Mm-hmm. So I think there are racial fears very much so in the zombie canon. I mean, they're rehearsed in there. They're played out in there. So there's a lot going on there. And again, the motto seems to be, or the moral of the story is, get yourself a gun and learn how to use it, because that's the only thing, or an edged weapon, a broadsword, something like that. You need something to fight these people off.
Yeah, it's remarkable when you think about it, the messages that these stories that we tell ourselves for entertainment actually send to the majority. What's interesting too, though, is that there's other kind of government bodies themselves that actually picked up on this. I remember the CDC, it's probably a couple of years ago now, or maybe a year and a half, they released this basically article on their website. It's still up there on zombie preparedness, right? And the I think it was started as a kind of a, well, a joke, really, to a certain extent, obviously. But, you know, it was done to kind of spur on education. But in fact, in
it was public relations or, you know, health education, whatever they call that.
Right, right, exactly. And that wasn't revealed until later. I think if you go to the website today, that page looks actually a bit different than when I was on it last time. Now they kind of they describe on the page. Well, they say this: as it turns out, what first began as a tongue-in-cheek campaign to engage new audiences with preparedness messages has proven to be a very effective platform, blah, blah, blah. We continue to reach, engage, you know. But initially, when you went to the website, it wasn't this kind of indication that it was kind of for fun or a joke, basically. And I think some people even picked up on it and wrote like, what the hell are they up to? You know, because some people argue that institutions like the CDC, just as you said, you know, these are actually not institutions that are looking after our health. They're actually doing very detrimental things, you know, and it was kind of funny that they picked up on that working with the zombie phenomena as a way to spread the message about it, you know.
Well, apparently it's not just the CDC. I've seen reports that, for example, U.S. Marines, U.S. Navy Special Ops, and so on, civilian, like you call them, emergency response people, have been using zombie outbreaks for planning and having maneuvers, military exercises based around them, because it provides sort of a mock enemy. And what they're interested in is the notion of asymmetric warfare, which they're trying to prepare for. Now, I'm not sure what they mean by asymmetric warfare, but it seems like it's civil defense or civil breakdown, where you have large armed forces coming in, fighting disorganized but very populous locals. So this zombie thing has tickled the fancy of military planners. That's pretty scary.
Now,
there's another aspect of the zombie too. You know, we live in this age of political correctness, and you can't say things like, you can't mention, for example, that Islamic people are invading Europe. You can't, you know, they say, well, Islam is a religion. You know how this stuff goes. You can't say obvious things that are obviously true. The zombie fulfills a function. It provides an enemy that is politically correct. Does that make sense to you?
Yep, sure does.
All of a sudden, you know, you can't even play cowboys and Indians anymore. Oh, my God. If, you know, that would be racist nowadays. But you can certainly kill the zombie. You know, the zombie or whatever you do to zombies, you terminate them or neutralize them or something. Actually, what they do is they call it the central nervous system disconnect, usually. So you can kill zombies, but you can't kill anybody else, any third world peoples or any people of privileged races and things like that. So that's kind of it provides a function. I mean, it does provide a function.
Yeah, that's interesting, because there's a lot of these, I don't know what you call them. I guess it's, I forget what they call it now for some reason, but it's, you know, you have these events, of course, when people are, you know, outside and they're dressing up and they're walking as zombies and all that stuff.
They call them zombie crawls, zombie walks. They're zombie marathons.
Really?
I believe on about 600 or so college campuses, there's a game played called Human versus Zombies, where you have teams and the zombies are zombie, you know, they're dressed like zombies in the movies. And there's a referee. The zombie hunters use Nerf guns. You know, they fire those little sponge rubber missiles. And also, they can use rolled-up socks. And so if the zombie is struck with one of those, the zombie is out of action. And the referee observes all this stuff. They play it here on my campus. And I've watched the students do this. And it's fascinates me because you see these people who are 20 years old who love this stuff. I talk to these people sometimes, and I've heard reports from them like, this is the best thing I've ever done in my life.
Really?
Now, that's interesting to me. Now, how that you're 20, now, when I was 20 years old, I think I was predominantly interested in sex and literature in that order.
Right.
or maybe the other way around. I'm not sure. But it was you know, they both were pretty intense interests. So how a 20-year-old regards this game of zombies as the most important thing of their life, is that's interesting to me. But it gives them some kind of contrast, like a psychic contrast with this gray, unending reality. It excites their life and so on. But again, this goes on at least 600 college campuses, And I don't know how many zombie walks and zombie crawls. There are zombie themed weddings now. You name
God.
There's zombie porn. There's gay porn. There's and of course I didn't go into firearms related products. All sorts of zombie type. There were zombie handguns. You could buy a zombie Slayer Ruger pistol. You could. A lot of these things are painted that sort of zombie green, that fluorescent green mm-hmm. color.
Right.
There's zombie ammunition. Hornady cartridge company came out with a line of zombie ammunition that sold tremendously well, and they made an amazing amount of money off that, and they were quite surprised to see what happened with it. So that and there were zombie shoots around the country where you can go to with your AR-15 and sign up for this thing, and you walk through a course and go through several hundred rounds of ammunition at these zombie simulations and so on. So there's a lot going on with this. And it seems to have brought a lot of new people into gun culture.
Wow. Yeah, that is interesting. So it's amazing how this has caught on. I mean, the zombie then represents basically everything that we maybe individually, but also collectively perhaps want to project upon it. Things that we fear, things that we dislike or hate or whatever, and that is to one extent forbidden in society, right? So it's an outlet for something, and it serves a very very clear function, if this is the case.
Very clear function. And you know, when it comes down to it, I don't know what you think about Thomas Malthus and Malthusian notions of population, but mm-hmm. I agree with Malthus's basic idea. Not so he talked mainly about economic resources and so on, but I'm just speaking here in the terms of population. Population grows algorithmically, or whatever it is, exponentially. And at some point, the population exceeds the ability to hold it. And this is zombieism too. What do you do with all these hungry people? What do you do with all these millions of people in undeveloped countries? Bring them all to the West? Or do like...
That seems to be the idea, as things are right now, yeah.
You know, and so so we can feed a lot of people, or rich countries, but if you took everybody who was rich and divided all that amongst the poor, it would all be gone. And then what about the next generation of the poor?
Yep, that's right.
I mean, it's this problem is coming to call at some point. I mean, it's knocking at the door of the West, and people don't want to discuss it because there's too much anxiety in this. It's ugly. You know, it's funny, you get these politicians who are populists, like Bernie Sanders.
Yeah.
You know, this man acts like you can just tax a few rich people and make all these problems go away all over the world. I hate to say it, but Bernie Sanders to me is Pete Seeger without the banjo.
Yeah.
But it's okay. Yeah. That's,
yeah. No, I agree. I agree. I think it's, yeah, he's remarkable. They've definitely upped the rhetoric in terms of the position of the left, and it's more, I guess, more for being America, more openly socialist than I think ever seen before. Interesting.
Yeah, I've talked to some of his adherents, and of course, the young people like him. You know the old saw about if you're not a socialist when you're 20, you have no heart, and if you're still a socialist when you're 50, you have no brain. I'm a professor, so I run into a lot of young people, and they find Bernie kind of attractive because it's a nice Hallmark card kind of way of looking at reality. We'll just, everybody will share. Let's be nice. Why can't we all get along? You know, the cake is only so big, and only so many people know how to bake cakes anyways.
That's true. Yeah, I know. It's this idea that we do things that feel good emotionally as opposed to making hard decisions, and also making those decisions now before we are at a stage where this is going to be too late. I mean, I definitely understand the point that you raised earlier, both in terms of overpopulation, but also just management of that population, right? I mean, at what stage do we seriously consider things like eugenics, right? I mean, not dysgenics like we have now, but the idea that we want to improve life, and we want to increase. Today it feels like we're on the reverse of that, Brian. It's almost like that we lift up those who are at the very bottom, if you will, of the ladder, and then we tear down those that have achieved something in this life. It's a reversal in my view right now.
I agree. I think the West has fallen into this trap of subsidizing this kind of low behavior and so on. I mean, you've got too many administrative bodies that are in the business, essentially, of treating problems, and that's what they do. They find the problem, they create the problem, they subsidize the problem, and the problem grows. I mean, it's funny. You have these ridiculous names. For example, in the state of Michigan now, I believe the welfare department is called the Family Independence Agency, which is exactly 180 degrees away from what it really does. So you have these agencies that are they boast that they have more people they're serving this year than they did last year.
That should be the reverse, right?
Yeah. It's a hard thing. I mean, I'm a fairly compassionate person, and especially on an individual level, I try to be. I'm good to my friends. I have a code. On the other hand, how much can you give? How much can a society give? You form a social contract, and it's for the people who form the social contract. It's not for the whole, every person who will ever be born anywhere under any conditions.
Yeah. Well, exactly. You create a commons, and people decided on some level to go together, create a system that would benefit the descendants of those people, right? That's the very function and point of it. But today, there are discussions where basically you being in a position where you benefit from that work that your ancestors did is that they now call privilege, right? And we're privileged, and that's something negative.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a very strange. It's nice that the West has been able to afford to have fantasies like this.
Right, exactly. But,
I think at some point the West will not be able to afford such fantasies. Maybe we're facing that time. But one of the points of my book is the zombie is no mere fad. I mean, this thing is a symbolic. This is a big archetype. It's the appropriate archetype of our time. Again, it's death come visiting. It's destruction come visiting. It's your, I hate to use this phrase, your chickens coming home to roost.
Yeah. Well, you know, the question is if we should approach this matter when it might be too late, when we might be at a stage where we have depleted the very last of the very system that even was in a position to help others in this capacity, right? I mean, basically what I see happening in Sweden, for example, where the shared ability is so high that we are now tearing down and destroying things for its own population. And when this goes to the full extent, we're probably going to be in a situation where Sweden won't be able to help anybody. I've made this point before on the program, so sorry you guys that, you know, are tired of this now, but I think it's a good example. Sweden managed to give Africa about $2 billion, close to $2 billion in 2012 alone. I don't know how many, if this is something that happens every year or whatever, but it's remarkable that a country of 8 million is giving this much money to a continent of, I don't know, 1. Whatever billion it is now.
Mm. And 1.5 tomorrow or something.
Right. Okay. Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, that's remarkable. But then also to overwhelm this country to such an extent that we probably, if you know, all this thing with the experiment of multiculturalism, you know, continues as it does now, we probably won't be able to help ever again, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, how much can you give? I mean, you cannot feed, okay, let's get biblical. I think it says somewhere in the Gospels, Jesus says the poor will always be with us.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they're hard to avoid. Be nice. I'm compassionate on an individual basis, but I don't see I need to do this on a world basis. It's not a feasible project. Let me read you a quote, if you let me.
Yes.
Okay, this is from the book. We are the zombies, or fast becoming so. By we, I mean Western civilization. We are dead and mindless, quickly cooling as we shuffle, and certainly not walking upright towards destiny. Many people are beginning to consciously recognize and articulate this apprehension. Many more seem to perceive it at some deep, pre-rational level. The zombie is an articulation and embodiment of our collective spiritual alarm over our own state of walking death, our walk towards destruction and uselessness. My thesis, stated plainly, the zombie phenomenon represents a profound disturbance in the Western collective unconscious caused by anxieties over the decline of Western civilization.
Yeah.
It's a
scary. It's scary, you know.
Yeah, it is a death's head symbol. I mean, it's frightening. And the other thing about it is it's so I don't know. It's like these some cultures have these Day of the Dead type celebrations and so on. It sort of turns like into a carnival. And I guess that too alleviates anxiety. So in a sense, our media use of the zombie has turned it into a carnival as well. So it's pretty frightening. And my own belief is that I don't think the West is going to survive as it has. I think there are going to be pockets of Western civilization here and there, but they're going to be pretty interesting pockets. I don't know what kind of political organization they're going to be, some kind of hyper-pluralism or something like that, because somebody's got to make something and create something at some level somewhere. But yeah. I don't know how this is going to work out. I see the masses and the big governmental entities are strictly, they're part of the problem. They produce this stuff.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, it is necrotic. It's in the way that we have transformed things, or we allowed it to happen. We haven't been paying attention, and it's slowly, and in some cases, increasingly just getting worse and worse. I'm wondering, you know, in terms of the ability for us to work as these kind of mediators, as we are right now, where we're importing different ethnic groups, we're obviously competing for power and influence. And as we've seen in Germany and Sweden too, Finland as well, now just the last early months here, New Year's Eve specifically in Germany, in Cologne, of course, but in other places consequently to that, you create such horrible conditions that it becomes impossible to kind of sustain society as we've done it before. And that in itself, to me, is kind of the embodiment of this, that it's like we are not even protecting our own people. It has become a dead system as far as I'm concerned.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is a problem here in America too, though. I mean, I've lived around deniers of problems all my life. I come from Detroit, which was a city with problems.
Yeah.
And you could not walk down the street in many areas of Detroit. I mean, it was dangerous. And there's a lot of cities like that in the United States. And now there will be a lot of, you know, I always had this picture of Europe in my mind as being a nice place to visit, that people were kind of orderly and civil and so forth. And I guess the chickens are coming home to roost. Or I don't know if they're coming home, but they're coming to roost.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny you use that word necrotic. I use that in my book. I describe the West as necrotic in a galloping way.
Exactly. I was actually just reading that. You know, I can read that paragraph. At the very least, the zombie adds some much-needed psychic contrast to the cold, to the gray, and to the unending. It also provides a face, albeit necrotic, to the seemingly impersonable sociological forces that undermine the West. For in a near-perfect correspondence with the zombie, the West itself appears to be necrotic in a galloping way. Both need brains to ease the pain. How do we get those brains back? What do we need to do here?
Well, I think one does it by reading a little bit of Aristotle, by learning how to write a sentence, by studying some classics, by adhering I'm not a complete traditionalist, believe me. I've got my own version of Aristotle's rhetoric. I call Aristotle on Business Communication, but it describes how you use virtue to build something through rhetoric and civil society. And I think that's the hallmark of the West: individualism, discussion, conversation, virtue, excellence, all these things. And I think we need to strive for that and reject collectivism and work together in groups and so on, but reject this gigantic collectivism and all these people with these insane panaceas and so on that who make careers out of it too. They're all careerist bureaucrats, most of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they say the things now that sound good, that make people feel good on the short term. See, that's my big problem with this, that they are unable or unwilling to face some of these tough decisions and problems, basically, because again, that's not what people want to hear. They want to hear everything is all right. We'll take care of everything. We'll fix everything for you. But the fact is, the reality is that the more people deny that, and the more we continue to vote for people that promise us those things, the closer we get to the precipice of the edge here, you know.
Mm-hmm. How about we end this? I give you a few of my recommendations, which I call to zombie or not to zombie. That is the question. These are a couple things I put at the end of the book, maybe suggestions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Don't get bitten, the first rule. This translates into not letting yourself become a victim. Stay out of places where zombies and the lawless prowl. The wise man does not run towards trouble. Be prudent. Defend yourself, which is much more of an attitude of self-respect and respect for others, a personal decision than a definite set of skills. Follow the lead of millions of Americans who have recently purchased firearms and learn to use them well and safely. 3, turn off the television or watch very selectively. Don't allow it to suck out your brains.
That's true, yeah.
Yeah. Remember that even the most insignificant physical or mental activity, such as 10 minutes spent planting a radish or writing a letter, is probably more beneficial than 8 hours of watching television or 100 tablets of a mood-altering drug. Participate meaningfully in civil society by becoming an active member in a voluntary association. Articulate and define your rights, both old and new. Create something, anything. Dig a hole, if that's what you'd like to do, but a nice hole that suits you in a location where there simply needs to be a hole. In other words, be creative. Fight, assert, organize, resist. Not to be fractious, but with purpose and pride. Adopt a code. Be a gentleman or a lady or an upland barbarian or a farmer. But figure out who you are and especially who you are not and insist on being recognized. Stand up straight and walk like the higher primate that you are. Don't run with fools. Associate with virtuous persons. Love what you do. If you can't, find something else to do. Those are my general set of recommendations.
Yeah, well, it's as good. This is something we need. You know, the aspect of guns is something I wanted to, you know, kind of talk more about in the second segment. But what do you think that we can, what needs to happen for us to kind of encourage that environment of getting back to both intellectual things and also interest people more in those kinds of areas? It almost sometimes it feels like it's I don't want to be defeatist by any means, but it feels like the cycle, if you will, that lies behind this decline, that the rise and fall that seems to take place with any civilization, is almost unstoppable to a certain extent. And maybe that's why you said that it's more likely that this will be preserved in pockets than on any larger scale. Is it too big for us to fight it, do you think?
Well, there's a lot working against you. There's inertia of huge collectives and so on. There are huge masses of people. Nevertheless, I believe creativity bursts out here and there, and I believe good people are good people, and by associating, they become better people. So I think that you can't keep this down, but I don't think you're going to have these gigantic abstract state kind of international states and so on. They're going to be these utopian places to live. I think they might have some of these might be hells to live in, but I think it's going to be people here and there and so on kind of saying, no, we're going to do something a little different. We're going to do it on our own. We're going to be autonomous.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. No, I think the, as you raised before, the idea that this is something that's being picked up by military in terms of planning for future scenarios and whatnot, but it's very interesting to see that they've shifted over to these urban environments in most cases. And I guess they, as you said, they call it asymmetrical because it's very unpredictable. And to a certain extent, this is what we've seen already with the increase in terrorism within the West, of course, that it's something that is so difficult to pinpoint and fight. And even despite all the intelligence, all the surveillance, they just lose control sometimes and they can't keep up with it. And that in itself is a really scary kind of prospect, if you will, that we have imported into the West lots of people that you know obviously can't belong to this faction, and we just don't have any control of it. I mean, is this the future now? I mean, is it, you know, perpetual terrorism and military that's ready to be deployed against its own people? I mean, it's kind of frightening, isn't it?
It seems that there's a tendency to quickly label people terrorists or put people on terrorist watch lists and so on, and have this done by swift administrative secret action. So, yeah, I would think there's a great deal of this going on, and I think we probably know less about it than we should. You know, there's even talk in the United States of putting people on a who are on the terror watch list, banning them from buying guns. Well, okay, great, but the problem is, you know, no one knows who's on the terror watch list. I mean, and then no one, they can just put you on this, you don't even know you're on it. So this can be something that some military planner says, well, I think anyone who comes of this descent or in an urban area is a potential terrorist. I mean, so yeah, there's a lot of this kind of stuff going on. And it seems like it's a lot easier to, here, let me put it in a different way. One of the things I think that happened in Western culture is we ran out of easy colonies. You know, it's no longer possible to colonize the world because it's all occupied and so on.
Mm-hmm.
At one time, the whole world was just laying there with golden nuggets on the ground, you know, metaphorically speaking. And
right.
You could go in there and for example, who was that? Jack London wrote a story in which one of the characters says, white man's duty is to farm the world. Well, the world's being farmed already, and the white man is not farming. Well, he's farming some of it, but the other parts are taken up. So instead of colonizing new territory, the direction of colonization has gone inward. I firmly believe that modern society consists of kind of like an interior colonization, where they're trying to colonize people, organizations, education, the family, build up these little empires of based, you know, bureaucratic empires inside the country. And I think that's consequent to that is a great deal of regimentation, a great deal of control, a great deal of surveillance, a great deal of record keeping, and so on.
Yeah, I mean, it's also colonization of the mind, I think, with political correctness and liberal values and create these, you know, kind of drones, really, that are just in lockstep and in accordance with anything that the establishment and the elite pretty much are, you know, pushing over our way, right? To make us malleable and make us become easily controllable. That's what it's about too, right?
I meet a lot of young people, obviously, people who are from ranging age from 18 to 22 or so, very, more or less. And I often ask them questions about what, you know, about history and what they know and so on. And the thing that gets me is they don't know. They're ahistorical. In general, not all of them. Some of them have, you know, I've had people come and recite the U.S. Constitution, you know, the Declaration of Independence to me and things like that. But they have no idea who Thomas Paine was. They don't know the difference between Martin Luther and Martin Luther King. They don't know the Civil Rights Movement and the Civil War. They have no idea of Western culture, other than that America and has been evil and stuff like that, you know, to other people. But yeah, so they're by making them ahistoric, you make them very malleable, and they have sort of a shared vocabulary. But it's more like political correctness than it is any kind of depth or philosophy, and that's pretty frightening. And that's the result of an education system that's been, I believe, increasingly uniform over time, and becoming more uniform as time goes on.
Yeah, interesting. What are some of the other, I mean, you have a bunch of chapters in the book, of course, 10 if I see this right here. And what are some of the other aspects that you talk about in the book that we haven't gotten into yet?
Let me think on this.
If there is anything, if we left out something.
Yeah, I think we've covered this stuff pretty well, other than I've talked, you know, a little bit about theories of decline and so on, and we've brought this up already. This seems inherent to the West. I mean, we've had this fascination with this stuff, and we're susceptible to these kind of things, and maybe we're susceptible to decline because we're so progressive. I mean, if you're into progress and so on, let's put it this way: if you're trying to get rich, you certainly are sensitive to poverty. So, yeah, if you're progressive, you're very much sensitive to, you know, counter progress and so on. Yeah. So let's see. I'm trying to think of some other myself here. You know, I just wrote this book. A thing I like about it is I had a student of mine call me, an ex-student of mine. He's an attorney now, and he said he really liked the book because he read one chapter. And the following three words were in the same paragraph: transubstantiation, Aristotle, and fuck.
Excellent.
So it's that kind of book.
Right.
But it's pretty well grounded. I mean, I tried to make this a scholarly book, and at the same time, I tried to account for what I saw.
Yeah, for sure. And kind of an observation of the culture that we find ourselves in. And, do you think that this archetype will go away? I mean, it's not about creating a new cultural icon and think that it's going to go away. I mean, as we said, perhaps it's a feedback loop, if you will, but it's obviously not that the zombie was created and then we started to behave like that. There's tons of different type of monsters out there. And I think this one was not chosen, but this one was the most appropriate one to describe unconsciously what state we are in, basically, right?
Yeah, I think there was almost a demand for the zombie or some kind of need there definitely a need, because, there are other popular monsters. There are all sorts of books on vampires and so on, but those to me seem more, they speak more to sexual needs and things like that, sexual fantasies or roles or something like this. But the zombie, he hits home. I mean, there's a lot of representation going on with the zombie. He's familiar to almost everyone, and almost everyone can put themselves in this position of imagining themselves in some kind of zombie apocalypse and so on. It's a familiar, again, imagine what would happen if the lights went out for 10 days in Detroit or in Toledo or in Newark or in St. Louis or in New York. What would happen?
Or Antwerp in Belgium. Yeah, I get your point. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it would be bad.
Cannibalism, maybe in just a few days. Who knows, right? As you said, when the trucks stops coming to the local grocery store, we're only a couple of days, I guess, away from real bloody revolution, basically.
Oh yeah, precisely. There are other genres of like Armageddon and so on. There's this fellow who writes on after the collapse of the United States. I think his name is Rawls or Rollins or something like that. And he writes on this and so on. And this is the United States winds up getting invaded by UN troops and so on. This is, familiar to some of these doomsday people and so on, or some of these preppers and so on.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But this seems like a very small market compared to the zombie. I mean, the zombie, Walking Dead. I mean, look at the, I think Wall Street Journal estimated there's like a $4 or $5 billion annual market in zombie.
It's amazing. Movies. Absolutely amazing. I'd never understood the draw of it. I never personally liked it. I think I had an appreciation for some of the things that we've talked about today, that it's like, okay, it describes a certain state. But you've definitely opened my eyes to what it really means in terms of the archetypal nature of it and why maybe people are drawn to it and whatnot. But it seems that, correct me if you think I'm wrong, but it seems that it functions mostly on kind of an unconscious level, right? That the draw seems to be, if you quite don't know what it is or why you need to be exposed to it, because that would learn you a lesson almost, right?
Oh, sure. Yeah. The zombie might bring people to awareness. I really don't know though. I haven't noticed it happening with the HI, the human versus zombie players, but it could happen.
Right.
You get another, this other aspect of drawing to awareness. Like I talk about the armed self-defense. One of the interesting things that's partly related to the zombie is I see an explosion in the United States of firearms training classes and trainers, and some of them are quite advanced and so on. You can take a specialist class about gunfighting in your car, for example.
Really?
Huh. Yeah. Tricks and techniques, and I guess they take you out on a range, and they have an old car, and so on. So there's all sorts of specialized things, and then people practice drills from like very close up and far away, and all sorts of scenarios involving houses and entering rooms and clearing rooms. So there's sort of this. I don't know if I'd call it a cottage industry, but maybe that's a good term for it. This cottage industry of trainers all over the country, and they seem to be thriving. And I think this is part of this fear, because people don't know when they're going to have to take over their own house again, or repel invaders, or whatever. Some of this stuff seems arcane to me because, you know, I'm an old gun culture person, and I shoot and so on, and I carry a weapon I have a concealed carry permit and all this kind of stuff, but I'm not exotic about it. I don't see the need to do some of these drills and so on. I mean, I know how to use what I have. But these people are engaged in these training things with multiple targets and multiple ranges and moving targets and all these things that strike me as and drawing and shooting from very close range and so on, and multiple shots at different assailants and so on. It's very interesting what they're doing. And a lot of this seems very much anxiety driven. And I think the zombie stuff contributes to it because again, just watch an episode of The Walking Dead and you'll see all this stuff being done.
Yeah, I got to watch a few of those now and see what the hell it's all about, you know, because it's very interesting. Do you think that much of this also then works unconsciously on the part of the directors and writers, or do they, is any of these aware of something, do you think?
That's a good question. Sometimes I wonder if those guys are completely mercenary in the sense of, you know, we do this for money and we'll do whatever we must do to get money. But sometimes I think there are genuine fountains of creativity from, you know, whatever wellsprings this stuff comes from. So I would say the good ones are probably the ones that resonate with people's fears the most. So they probably, to answer your question, yeah, I think it does work on the writers and so on. And maybe they're just more sensitive than the rest of us.
Right. Well, let's definitely talk about guns in the second hour. By the way, we just put up a story on the site from, I think it was from New York Post, about how actually Europeans too are actually stocking up now on guns after these, they call them sex attacks, but these, you know, horrendous targeting of women over in Germany. And as I said, it's been happening in Finland and even Sweden too, actually. It was a music festival in Sweden both years now, but 2 years in a row, there's been attacks on women. And the police, together with the certain papers in Sweden, have been trying to cover it up. It is just absolutely horrendous. So it's actually especially women and cops that are stocking up now on guns for, obviously, for personal protection and all this kind of stuff. So it isn't just happening in America, and maybe there's something tied to it. And I'm glad to see that as well in terms of self-defense, you know, because in some cases, these criminals that are coming in, they definitely have an ability to get their hands on guns. And it's not like they're abiding by the rules and the laws anyway, right? So,
oh, yeah. Well, you know, I made a comment in the zombie book that's, the zombies in a lot of versions want to eat your brains. But it really doesn't make any difference from a practical point of view if a criminal bashes your brains in with a brick. You still need to, from a practical point of view, you need to defend yourself.
Exactly. Well, let me ask you one more question here before we talk a bit more about where people can get a copy of the book. But would a potential counteraction to this, would that be to create kind of a... or try to create a new archetype, one that moves in a positive direction and helps turn things around, or should we embrace the zombie archetype and kind of let it do its thing, if you know what I'm saying?
You know, maybe the archetype is kind of buried under the maybe the really meaningful archetype here is the response to the zombie by the heroes of the film. It's funny that if you watch World War Z, it's a Hollywood production, the film version, the response is the collective comes through and saves everybody's ass. I mean, they come up and they invent a serum or something that works on people and so on. But in most of the other versions, the people who live are the people who are autonomous, armed, self-reliant, small groups. And maybe this is the new archetype. Form up. Train, learn, protect yourself. And maybe that's the new idea that comes out of the zombie film, the successful, the new world.
Yeah, there's this other was shown out too, right? There were, they invent some kind of serum or something, and they try to basically reinsert these zombies, you know, rehabilitated somewhat into society again. I forget which one it is, but it's kind of funny.
That's an interesting idea. Well, hey, there's another, you know, maybe that's the play between these two streams. You know, the collective is going to help you, or the, you know, you have to help yourself. And I'm with the help yourself and help each other not some massive collection. I made a joke earlier about Bernie Sanders is Pete Seeger without the banjo.
Mm-hmm.
I keep thinking of what would happen if you gave Joseph Stalin a banjo. Would he become a more happy figure? Would we accept him more? But that's, to me, Joseph Stalin is more like the voice of the collective. You will, we will organize you right into the grave if necessary.
Yeah, it's true. They have a lot of blood on their hands, those people.
Yeah.
Now, I want to urge people, by the way, to check out the previous show that we did with Brian as well. It's obviously up on redicecreations.com right now. The radio archive is from May, and we did it on the 10 Commandments of Propaganda. Also a really good show. Brian has a book out by the same title. So we'll link up to that, and do check it out if you want to find out more from Brian. And where do people go to pick up a copy of this book, Brian, Zombology?
My books are all on Amazon. They're easy to get, or you can get them directly from Arctos Media. But Amazon's probably the easiest way for everybody in the world to buy a book today.
Yeah, definitely. We'll have the links up to that as well, of course, and also to Arctos. And then you have a blog as well, Rights of the Anti-Media. Anything you want to say about that one?
Yes. I blog things that are of interest to me spiritually, psychologically, philosophically. I put pictures of my elk hunts on there. I wrote recently an article, Aristotle on Trump. It appears that Aristotle knew Donald Trump. He describes him perfectly in the second book of Rhetoric.
Great.
Stuff like that. So I have a blog that you can read kind of current things, interesting things, short things. I'm working on a book now called Propaganda, which strictly concerns the informational battle over guns and gun rights in mainly in America, but a bit in Europe too.
Interesting. I'll ask you about Trump in the second hour too, but stay with us, everybody. We'll take a short break here, and we'll continue with Brian Anspatrick. Stay tuned for an excellent continuation on guns, gun culture, what guns to choose, how to prepare for what's coming, and also women's need in the West to protect themselves with guns in these insecure times. We talk a bit about what happened in Cologne, Germany over New Year's, and that this sparked a rise in gun sales across Europe, especially in Germany, of course. And this is an encouraging trend. Well, not that this is happening, but that people take the step to protect themselves, obviously. We speak on hunting as well, both as an ancient ceremony, but also as a necessity to feed yourself and your family. We talk about different rifles, what to choose, etc. So second hour with Brian and Patrick is coming up. What we do here is that we have a members section. We spare you from commercial breaks, no interruptions in the program. We don't have any blinking website banners on our websites or annoying pop-ups. We, in fact, don't even monetize our YouTube videos. We do everything to spare you from that with the aspiration that you will support us instead and make sure that we can build a network free from, you know, corporate influence and sponsors and whatnot that directs us or tells us what to do and what not to talk about, etc. So join us at redicemembers.com. Sign up and tune in. Over 1,000 shows and counting, films, videos, inside episodes, and much more. Upcoming, we have Andy Nowicki and also a roundtable with Lars Vilks, Henrik Rundqvist, and Don Park. So stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be right back. Thank you so much for listening.